Sebastian only looked more confused, but I don't see why he can't. All right, that's enough, Magnus said, and snapped his fingers once. Sebastian froze in place, his mouth still open, his hand partially outstretched. Sebastian! Clary reached out to touch him, but he was as rigid as a statue. Only the slight rise and fall of his chest showed that he was even still alive. Sebastian? She said again, but it was hopeless. She knew somehow that he couldn't see or hear her. She turned on Magnus. I can't believe you just did that. What on earth is wrong with you? Has whatever's in that pipe melted your brain? Sebastian's on our side. I don't have a side, Clary darling, Magnus said with a wave of his pipe. And really, it's your own fault I had to freeze him for a short while. You were awfully close to telling him I'm not Ragnar Fell. That's because you're not Ragnar Fell? Magnus blew a stream of smoke out of his mouth and regarded her thoughtfully through the haze. Come on, he said. Let me show you something. He held the door of the small house open, gesturing her inside. With a last, disbelieving glance at Sebastian, Clary followed him. The interior of the cottage was unlit. The faint daylight streaming in through the windows was enough to show Clary that they stood inside a large room crowded with dark shadows. There was an odd smell in the air as of burning garbage. She made a faint choking noise as Magnus raised his hand and snapped his fingers once again. A bright blue light bloomed from his fingertips. Clary gasped. The room was a shambles. Furniture smashed into splinters, drawers opened and their contents scattered. Pages ripped from books drifted in the air like ash. Even the window glass was shattered. I got a message from Fell last night, said Magnus, asking me to meet him here. I turned up here and found it like this. Everything destroyed, and the stench of demons all around.
Demons? But demons can't come into Idris.
I didn't say they have. I'm just telling you what happened.
Magnus spoke without inflection.
The place stank of something demonic in origin. Ragnar's body was on the floor. He hadn't been dead when they left him, but he was dead when I arrived. He turned to her. Who knew you were looking for him?
Madeline, Clary whispered. But she's dead.
Sebastian, Jason, Simon, the Lightwoods.
Ah, said Magnus. If the Lightwoods know, the Clave may well know by now. And Valentine has spies in the Clave.
I should have kept it a secret instead of asking everyone about him, Clary said in horror. This is my fault. I should have warned Fell.
Might I point out, said Magnus, that you couldn't find Fell, which is in fact why you were asking people about him? Look, Madeline and you just thought of Fell as someone who could help your mother, not someone Valentine might be interested in beyond that. But there's more to it. Valentine might not have known how to wake up your mother. But he seems to have known that what she did to put herself in that state had a connection to something he wanted very much. A particular spell book?
How do you know all this? Clary asked.
Because Ragnar told me.
But...
Magnus cut her off with a gesture. Warlocks have ways of communicating with each other. They have their own languages. He raised the hand that held the blue flame. Logos.
Letters of fire. Each at least 6 inches tall, appeared on the walls as if etched into the stone with liquid gold. The letters raced around the walls, spelling out words Clary couldn't read. She turned to Magnus.
What does it say?
Ragnar did this when he knew he was dying. It tells whatever warlock comes after him what happened. As Magnus turned, the glow of the burning letters lit his cat eyes to gold. He was attacked here by servants of Valentine. They demanded the Book of the White. Aside from the Grey Book, it's among the most famous volumes of supernatural work ever written. Both the recipe for the potion Jocelyn took and the recipe for the antidote to it are contained in that book.
Clary's mouth dropped open. So was it here?
No. It belonged to your mother. All Ragnar did was advise her where to hide it from Valentine.
So it's...
It's at the Wayland family manor. The Waylands had their home very close to where Jocelyn and Valentine lived. They were their nearest neighbors. Ragnar suggested that your mother hide the book in their home, where Valentine would never look for it. In the library, as a matter of fact.
But Valentine lived in the Wayland Manor for years after that, Clary protested. Wouldn't he have found it?
It was hidden inside another book.
One Valentine was unlikely to ever open.
Magnus smiled crookedly.
Simple recipes for housewives. No one can say your mother didn't have a sense of humor.
So have you gone to the Wayland Manor? Have you looked for the book?
Magnus shook his head.
Clary, there are misdirection wards on the manor. They don't just keep out the Clave. They keep out everyone, especially downworlders. Maybe if I had time to work on them, I could crack them, but...
Then no one can get into the manor?
Despair clawed at her chest.
It's impossible?
I didn't say no one, Magnus said.
I can think of at least one person who could almost certainly get into the manor.
You mean Valentine?
I mean, said Magnus, Valentine's son.
Clary shook her head. Jace won't help me, Magnus. He doesn't want me here. In fact, I doubt he's speaking to me at all.
Magnus looked at her meditatively. I think, he said, there isn't much that Jace wouldn't do for you if you asked him.
Clary opened her mouth and then shut it again. She thought of the way Magnus had always seemed to know how Alec felt about Jace, how Simon felt about her. Her feelings for Jace must be written on her face even now, and Magnus was an expert reader. She glanced away.
Say I can convince Jace to come to the manor with me and get the book, she said. Then what? I don't know how to cast a spell or make an antidote.
Magnus snorted. Did you think I was giving you all this advice for free? Once you get hold of the Book of the White, I want you to bring it straight to me.
The book? You want it?
It's one of the most powerful spell books in the world. Of course I want it. Besides, it belongs, by right, to Lilith's children, not Raziel's. It's a warlock book and should be in warlock hands.
But I need it to cure my mother.
You need one page out of it, which you can keep. The rest is mine. And in return, when you bring me the book, I'll make up the antidote for you and administer it to Jocelyn. You can't say it's not a fair deal. He held out a hand. Shake on it?
After a moment's hesitation, Clary shook. I'd better not regret this.
I certainly hope not, Magnus said, turning cheerfully back toward the front door. On the walls, the fire letters were already fading. Regret is such a pointless emotion, don't you agree?
The sun outside seemed especially bright after the darkness of the cottage. Clary stood blinking as the view swam into focus. The mountains in the distance. Wayfarer contentedly munching grass. And Sebastian, immobile as a lawn statue, one hand still outstretched. She turned to Magnus.
Could you unfreeze him now, please?
Magnus looked amused.
I was surprised when I got Sebastian's message this morning, he said. Saying he was doing a favor for you, no less. How did you wind up meeting him?
He's a cousin of some friends of the Lightwoods or something. He's nice, I promise.
Nice? Bah, he's gorgeous.
Magnus gazed dreamily in his direction.
You should leave him here.
I could hang hats on him and things.
No, you can't have him.
Why not?
Do you like him?
Magnus' eyes gleamed.
He seems to like you. I saw him going for your hand out there like a squirrel diving for a peanut.
Why don't we talk about your love life? Clary countered. What about you and Alec?
Alec refuses to acknowledge that we have a relationship, and so I refuse to acknowledge him. He sent me a fire message asking for a favor the other day. It was addressed to Warlock Bane, as if I were a perfect stranger. He's still hung up on Jace. I think, though, that relationship will never go anywhere.
A problem I imagine you know nothing about.
Oh, shut up.
Clary eyed Magnus with distaste. Look, if you don't unfreeze Sebastian, then I can never leave here, and you'll never get the Book of the White.
Oh, all right, all right.
But if I might make a request?
Don't tell him any of what I just told you, friend of the Lightwoods or not.
Magnus snapped his fingers petulantly. Sebastian's face came alive like a video flashing back to action after it had been paused.
Help us, he said. This isn't just some minor problem. This is life and death. You, Nephilim, think all your problems are life and death, said Magnus, Now go away. You've begun to bore me.
But go, Magnus said, a dangerous tone to his voice. Blue sparks glittered at the tips of his long fingers, and there was suddenly a sharp smell in the air like burning. Magnus's cat eyes glowed. Even though she knew it was an act, Clary couldn't help but back away.
I think we should go, Sebastian, she said.
Sebastian's eyes were narrow.
But Clary...
We're going, she insisted, and grabbing him by the arm, half-dragged him toward Wayfarer. Reluctantly, he followed her, muttering under his breath. With a sigh of relief, Clary glanced back over her shoulder. Magnus was standing at the door to the cottage, his arms folded across his chest. Catching her eye, he grinned and dropped one eyelid in a single glittering wink.
I'm sorry, Clary. Sebastian had a hand on Clary's shoulder and another on her waist as he helped her up onto Wayfarer's broad back.
She fought down the little voice inside her head that warned her not to get back onto the horse, or any horse, and let him hoist her up. She swung a leg over and settled herself in the saddle, telling herself she was balancing on a large, moving sofa and not on a living creature that might turn around and bite her at any moment.
Sorry about what? She asked as he swung up behind her. It was almost annoying how easily he did it, as if he were dancing, but comforting to watch.
He clearly knew what he was doing, she thought, as he reached around her to take the reins. She supposed it was good that one of them did.
About Ragnar Fell. I wasn't expecting him to be that unwilling to help, although warlocks are capricious. You've met one before, haven't you?
I met Magnus Bane. She twisted around momentarily to look past Sebastian at the cottage receding into the distance behind them. The smoke was puffing out of the chimney in the shape of little dancing figures.
Dancing Magnuses?
She couldn't tell from here.
He is the High Warlock of Brooklyn.
Is he much like Fell?
Shockingly similar.
It's all right about Fell. I knew there was a chance he'd refuse to help us.
But I promised you help.
Sebastian sounded genuinely upset.
Well, at least there's something else I can show you, so the day won't have been a complete waste of time.
What is it? She twisted around again to look up at him. The sun was high in the sky behind him, firing the strands of his dark hair with an outline of gold. Sebastian grinned. You'll see. As they rode farther away from Alicante, walls of green foliage whipped by on either side, giving way every so often to improbably beautiful vistas. Frost-blue lakes, green valleys, gray mountains, silver slivers of river and creek flanked by banks of flowers. Clary wondered what it would be like to live in a place like this. She couldn't help but feel nervous, almost exposed, without the comfort of tall buildings closing her in. Not that there were no buildings at all. Every once in a while, the roof of a large stone building would rise into view above the trees. These were manor houses, Sebastian explained, by shouting in her ear. The country houses of wealthy shadow hunter families. They reminded Clary of the big old mansions along the Hudson River, north of Manhattan, where rich New Yorkers had spent their summers hundreds of years ago. The road beneath them had turned from gravel to dirt. Clary was jerked out of her reverie as they crested a hill and Sebastian pulled Wayfarer up short. This is it, he said. Clary stared. It was a tumbled mass of charred, blackened stone, recognizable only by outline as something that had once been a house. There was a hollow chimney, still pointing toward the sky, and a chunk of wall with a glassless window gaping in its center. Weeds grew up through the foundations, green among the black.
I don't understand, she said. Why are we here?
You don't know? Sebastian asked.
This was where your mother and father lived, where your brother was born. This was Fairchild Manor.
Not for the first time, Clary heard Hodge's voice in her head. Valentine set a great fire and burned himself to death along with his family, his wife and his child. Scorched the land black. No one will build there still. They say the place is cursed. Without another word, she slid from the horse's back. She heard Sebastian call out to her, but she was already half running, half sliding down the low hill. The ground evened out where the house had once stood. The blackened stones of what had once been a walkway lay dry and cracked at her feet. In among the weeds, she could see a set of stairs that ended abruptly a few feet from the ground. Clary. Sebastian followed her through the weeds, but she was barely aware of his presence. Turning in a slow circle, she took it all in. Burned, half-dead trees. What had probably once been a shady lawn stretching away down a sloping hill. She could see the roof of what was probably another nearby manor house in the distance, just above the tree line. The sun sparked off broken bits of window glass in the one full wall that was still standing. She stepped into the ruins over a shelf of blackened stones. She could see the outline of rooms, of doorways, even a scorched cabinet, almost intact, flung on its side with smashed bits of china spilling out, mixing with the black earth. Once this had been a real house, inhabited by living, breathing people. Her mother had lived here, gotten married here, had a baby here. And then Valentine had come and turned it all to dust and ash, leaving Jocelyn thinking her son was dead, leading her to hide the truth about the world from her daughter. A sense of piercing sadness invaded Clary. More than one life had been wrecked in this place. She put her hand to her face and was almost surprised to find it damp. She had been crying without knowing it.
Clary, I'm sorry. I thought you'd want to see this.
It was Sebastian, crunching toward her across the rubble, his boots kicking up puffs of ash. He looked worried. She turned to him.
Oh, I do. I did. Thank you.
The wind had picked up. It blew strands of his dark hair across his face. He gave a rueful smile. It must be hard to think about everything that happened in this place, about Valentine, about your mother. She had incredible courage.
I know, Clary said.
She did. She does.
He touched her face lightly.
So do you.
Sebastian, you don't know anything about me.
That's not true. His other hand came up, and now he was cupping her face. His touch was gentle, almost tentative. I heard all about you, Clary. About the way you fought your father for the mortal cup. The way you went into that vampire-infested hotel after your friend. Isabel's told me stories, and I've heard rumors, too. And ever since the first one, the first time I heard your name, I've wanted to meet you. I knew you'd be extraordinary. She laughed shakily. I hope you're not too disappointed.
No, he breathed, sliding his fingertips under her chin. Not at all.
He lifted her face to his. She was too surprised to move, even when he leaned toward her and she realized belatedly what he was doing. Reflexively, she shut her eyes as his lips brushed gently over hers, sending shivers through her. A sudden fierce longing to be held and kissed in a way that would make her forget everything else surged through her. She put her arms up, twining them around his neck, partly to steady herself and partly to draw him closer. His hair tickled her fingertips, not silky like Jace's, but fine and soft. And she shouldn't be thinking about Jace. She pushed back thoughts of him as Sebastian's fingers traced her cheeks and the line of her jaw. His touch was gentle, despite the calluses on his fingertips. Of course, Jace had the same calluses from fighting. Probably all shadow hunters had them. She clamped down on the thought of Jace, or tried to, but it was no good. She could see him even with her eyes closed, see the sharp angles and planes of a face she could never properly draw, no matter how much the image of it had burned itself into her mind, see the delicate bones of his hands, the scarred skin of his shoulders. The fierce longing that had surged up in her so swiftly receded with a sharp recoil that was like an elastic band springing back. She went numb, even as Sebastian's lips pressed down on hers and his hands moved to cup the back of her neck. She went numb with an icy shock of wrongness. Something was terribly wrong, something even more than her hopeless longing for someone she could never have. This was something else, a sudden jolt of horror. As if she'd been taking a confident step forward and suddenly plunged into a black void. She gasped and jerked away from Sebastian with such force that she almost stumbled. If he hadn't been holding her, she would have fallen. Clary. His eyes were unfocused, his cheeks flushed with a high bright color. Clary, what's wrong?
Nothing.
Her voice sounded thin to her own ears. Nothing, it's just, I shouldn't have. I'm not really ready.
Did we go too fast? We can take it slower.
He reached for her, and before she could stop herself, she flinched away. He looked stricken.
I'm not going to hurt you, Clary.
I know. Did something happen?
His hand came up, stroked her hair back. She bit back the urge to jerk away.
Did Jace...
Jace? Did he know she'd been thinking about Jace? Had he been able to tell?
And at the same time, Jace is my brother. Why would you bring him up like that? What do you mean?
I just thought... He shook his head, pain and confusion chasing each other across his features. That maybe somebody else had hurt you.
His hand was still on her cheek. She reached up and gently but firmly detached it, returning it to his side.
No, nothing like that. I just... She hesitated. It felt wrong.
Wrong?
The hurt on his face vanished, replaced by disbelief.
Clary, we have a connection. You know we do. Since the first second I saw you.
Sebastian, don't.
I felt like you were someone I'd always been waiting for. I saw you feel it, too. Don't tell me you didn't.
But that hadn't been what she'd felt. She'd felt as if she'd walked around a corner in a strange city and suddenly seen her own brownstone looming up in front of her. A surprising and not entirely pleasant recognition, almost. How can this be here?
I didn't, she said.
The anger that rose in his eyes, sudden, dark, uncontrolled, took her by surprise. He caught her wrists in a painful grasp.
That's not true.
She tried to pull away.
Sebastian!
It's not true. The blackness of his eyes seemed to have swallowed up the pupils. His face was like a white mask, stiff and rigid.
Sebastian, she said as calmly as she could, you're hurting me.
He let go of her. His chest was rising and falling rapidly.
I'm sorry, he said. I'm sorry. I thought...
Well, you thought wrong, Clary wanted to say, but she bit the words back. She didn't want to see that look on his face again.
We should go back, she said instead. It'll be dark soon.
He nodded numbly, seeming as shocked by his outburst as she was. He turned and headed back toward Wayfarer, who was cropping grass in the long shadow of a tree. Clary hesitated a moment, then followed him. There didn't seem to be anything else she could do. She glanced down surreptitiously at her wrists as she fell into step behind him. They were ringed with red where his fingers had gripped her, and more strangely, her fingertips were smudged black, as if she had somehow stained them with ink. Sebastian was silent as he helped her up onto Wayfarer's back.
I'm sorry if I implied anything about Jace, he said finally as she settled herself in the saddle. He would never do anything to hurt you. I know it's for your sake that he's been visiting that vampire prisoner in the guard.
It was as if everything in the world ground to a sudden halt. Clary could hear her own breath whistling in and out of her ears, saw her hands, frozen like the hands of a statue, lying still against the saddle pommel.
Vampire prisoner? She whispered.
Sebastian turned a surprised face up to hers.
Yes, he said. Simon, that vampire they brought over with them from New York, I was sure you knew all about it.
Didn't Jace tell you?
Chapter 8. One of the Living. Simon woke to sunlight glinting brightly off an object that had been shoved through the bars of his window. He got to his feet, his body aching with hunger, and saw that it was a metal flask about the size of a lunchbox thermos. A rolled-up bit of notepaper had been tied around the neck. Plucking it down, Simon unrolled the paper and read. Simon, this is cow blood, fresh from the butcher's. Hope it's all right. Jace told me what you said, and I want you to know I think it's really brave. Just hang in there and we'll figure out a way to get you out. Isabel. Simon smiled at the scribbled X's and O's that ran along the bottom of the page. Good to know Isabel's flamboyant affection hadn't suffered under the current circumstances. He unscrewed the flask's top and had swallowed several mouthfuls before a sharp, prickling sensation between his shoulder blades made him turn around. Raphael stood calmly in the center of the room. He had his hands clasped behind his back, his slight shoulders set. He was wearing a sharply pressed white shirt and a dark jacket. A gold chain glittered at his throat. Simon almost gagged on the blood he was drinking. He swallowed hard, still staring.
You can't be here.
Raphael's smile somehow managed to give the impression that his fangs were showing, even though they weren't.
Don't panic, Daylighter.
I'm not panicking.
This wasn't strictly true. Simon felt as if he'd swallowed something sharp. He hadn't seen Raphael since the night he'd clawed himself, bloody and bruised, out of a hastily dug grave in Queens. He still remembered Raphael throwing packets of animal blood at him, and the way he'd torn into them with his teeth as if he were an animal himself. It wasn't something he liked to remember. He would have been happy never to see the vampire boy again.
The sun's still up. How are you here?
I'm not.
Raphael's voice was smooth as butter.
I am a projection. Look.
He swung his hand, passing it through the stone wall beside him.
I am like smoke. I cannot hurt you. Of course, neither can you hurt me.
I don't want to hurt you.
Simon set the flask down on the cot.
I do want to know what you're doing here.
You left New York very suddenly, Daylighter. You do realize that you're supposed to inform the head vampire of your local area when you're leaving the city, don't you?
Head vampire? You mean you... I thought the head vampire was someone else.
Camille has not yet returned to us,
Raphael said, without any apparent emotion.
I lead in her stead. You'd know all this if you'd bothered to get acquainted with the laws of your kind.
My leaving New York wasn't exactly planned in advance. And no offense, but I don't really think of you as my kind.
Dios.
Raphael lowered his eyes as if hiding amusement.
You are stubborn.
How can you say that?
It seems obvious, doesn't it?
I mean,
Simon's throat closed up.
That word. You can say it, and I can't say...
God.
Raphael's eyes flashed upward. He did look amused.
Age, he said, and practice, and faith, or its loss. They are in some ways the same thing. You will learn over time, little fledgling.
Don't call me that.
But it is what you are. You're a child of the night. Isn't that why Valentine captured you and took your blood? Because of what you are?
You seem pretty well-informed, Simon said. Maybe you should tell me.
Raphael's eyes narrowed.
I have also heard a rumor that you drank the blood of a shadow hunter and that is what gave you your gift, your ability to walk in sunlight. Is it true?
Simon's hair prickled.
That's ridiculous. If shadow hunter blood could give vampires the ability to walk in daylight, everyone would know about it by now. Nephilim blood would be at a premium. And there would never be peace between vampires and shadow hunters after that. So it's a good thing it isn't true.
A faint smile turned up the edges of Raphael's mouth.
True enough. Speaking of premiums, you do realize, don't you, Daylighter, that you are a valuable commodity now? There isn't a downworlder on this earth who doesn't want to get their hands on you.
Does that include you?
Of course it does.
And what would you do if you did get your hands on me?
Raphael shrugged his slight shoulders.
Perhaps I am alone in thinking that the ability to walk in the daylight might not be such a gift as other vampires believe. We are the children of the night for a reason. It is possible that I consider you as much of an abomination as humanity considers me.
Do you?
It's possible.
Raphael's expression was neutral.
I think you're a danger to us all. A danger to vampire kind, if you will. And you can't stay in this cell forever, Daylighter. Eventually you'll have to leave and face the world again. Face me again. But I can tell you one thing. I will swear to do no harm and not try to find you, if you in turn swear to hide yourself away once Alder Tree releases you. If you swear to go so far away that no one will ever find you, and to never again contact anyone you knew in your mortal life, I can't be more fair than that.
But Simon was already shaking his head.
I can't leave my family. Or Clary.
Raphael made an irritable noise.
They are no longer part of who you are. You're a vampire now.
But I don't want to be, said Simon.
Look at you complaining, said Raphael. You will never get sick, never die, and be strong and young forever. You will never age. What have you got to complain about?
Young forever, Simon thought.
It sounded good, but did